My name's Craig. I'm an addict. I like the mystery workshop. When I came to NA, there were perhaps 200 members and maybe 20 meetings in the world. One of my great joys has been being able to watch this fellowship and be a part of the growth of this fellowship. Come to a convention like this and I see, 1,000 people. And it just really excites me. What I hope to do for you, since you're all here to hear about the history, I guess, is try to give you some information. And I brought some goodies that people rarely see. And maybe give you a feel. Because I don't really know if we'll ever know the real history of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you. I really don't know if we'll ever find out the first time there was a fellowship like ours for us. We know that there were some attempts that preceded NA as we know it. And I'll touch on some of those. I've got a copy of a letter here that talks about or mentions two or three of them. That I'll read to you. If I can find it. This is addressed to a Betty Fong, HFD Group, Santa Monica, California. HFD Group is an habit-forming drug group. It's an AA special purpose group. This is dated March of 1954. It says, "Dear Betty, thanks a million, nay, 2 million, for your heartwarming letter of March 11th, updating me on your progress with addicts. I think this is all perfectly wonderful. At this stage, I'm sure quality that counts rather than the quantity. That you have been doing a quality job and have been inspiring others to do likewise is very evident. What can you tell me about the progress of those other groups, which at Lexington and here in the East go under the name Addicts Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous? At times I pick up very secondhand stories to the effect that they are making progress, but not so much as they might if they really came to grips with the 12 steps and had proper hospitalization. I'm also interested to know how many people you feel you have really straightened up and how these divide themselves between narcotics, who were once alcoholics, and the narcotic pure and simple. All of you concerned with this work surely have my warmest appreciation, and I hope you'll let everybody have the occasion of knowing it. Meanwhile, the main transmission belt to the addict will be from our AA members who have also suffered addiction. And they should surely be allowed attendance at open AA meetings, just as everyone else is. One more question. Do any of your recoveries who are straight addiction cases find difficulty in identifying themselves with other AA members? I guess I told you I've noticed in many alcoholics marked aversion for dope addicts and vice versa. How is this situation working out as you see it? I wish I could write you the long letter that yours deserves, but my desk is piled high. Meanwhile, may God love you dearly, all of you. Devotedly, Bill Wolf." Okay. That hints at a lot of things. It hints at the fact that there was a Narcotics Anonymous, and we found some records of that. In fact, there may have been three Narcotics Anonymous that preceded NA as we know it. There are also other groups like Addicts Anonymous. And in a talk that one of our folks gave early on, it talks about before NA there was HFD, habit-forming drug group. These were hidden. There were one or two or three people meeting in apartments here and there. No one knew where they were. They demanded some certain things and they were dominated by one or two persons. You know, you and I don't go for authority. We don't like authority. A few of the people I met down on Skid Row years ago from East L.A. formed another group known as Addicts Anonymous. They infringed on the AA name, and they died very quickly because they, too, were dominated by one man. We had another group that started in the Valley that also called itself HSD and was dominated by one man. So we found out very early, and our experience has taught us, that we can have no bosses, no big shots in Narcotics Anonymous. These groups, okay, and that's part of that. In the East, what Bill Wilson was referring to in that letter, we know that as early as 1944, there was a statement that, actually it was a question that was posed to Bill Wilson in a talk he gave at Yale, asking about an organization similar to AA which operates among addicts. I don't know what the response was, but that question says that there might have been something going on. We know that around 1946, a woman by the name of Major Dorothy Berry of the Salvation Army was working with women in prisons in New York, primarily with addicts. And out of that effort grew something called Narcotics Anonymous, which was closely related to the Salvation Army. And there's Salvation Army archives that point at that. There were other people involved in that. Two of the primary people were a man named Daniel Carlson and a woman by the name of Ray Lopez. This seems to be closer related to Salvation Army and the Salvation Army's seven steps than it is to the 12-step programs as we know them. The situation in Lexington, Kentucky that was referred to was that we know that in the prison system in Lexington there was a fellowship for addicts about that same period of time. There's some interesting things. Let me read you a copy of something called the 13 Steps of Narcotics Anonymous. One, admit the use of narcotics made my life seem more tolerable, but the drug had become an undesirable power over my life. Two, came to realize that to face life without drugs, I must develop an inner strength. Three, made a decision to face the suffering of withdrawal. Four, learn to accept my fears without drugs. Five, find someone who has progressed this far and is able to assist me. Six, admit to him the nature and depth of my addiction. Seven, realize the seriousness of my shortcomings as I know them and accept responsibility for facing them. Admit before a group of NA members these same shortcomings and explain how I am trying to overcome them. List from my own understanding all the persons I have hurt. Take a daily inventory of my actions and admit to myself those which are contrary to good conscience. Realize that to maintain freedom from drugs, I must share with others the experience from which I have benefited. Determine a purpose in my life and try with all my spiritual and physical power, all the physical and spiritual power within me to move towards fulfillment. 13, God help me. Those contain a lot of the same concepts, but are certainly very different than what we know as the 12 steps. We know there was stuff going on. It died out around 1960, perhaps the early 60s. That whole movement in the East died out. The NA groups we know of today relate to another attempt which happened in California in 1953. There have been other attempts. One of the things I remember when I was first coming around in probably 71, 72, there was a fellowship of something called Drugs Anonymous in Australia that, as a fellowship, changed their name to Narcotics Anonymous and started ordering medicine from us that joined our fellowship. And there have been many other groups. Probably the most recent major one is You hear fairly close in Toronto a couple of years back when a fellowship with a different name, having quite a number of groups, joined with us and became a part of Narcotics Anonymous. I believe that there have probably been dozens and dozens of independent starts of 12-step groups. There's a talk that I quoted from earlier that I'm going to quote another part of. The talk Jimmy gave at the 20th anniversary dinner in 73. See if I can find what I was... If I can find what I was reading to myself. Most of you know, okay. We started long before NA was a reality, even in name. We grew out of a need. And we found, those of us who were members, had come into AA and found we could recover. In AA, we found out that many addicts were still going down the road of degradation and death. And we thought it was right that we should try to do something. But you know, we're funny people. The more we try to do things together, the more we fight each other, and the more we tear each other apart. Tear down the very thing we're trying to build. And that's been the history up to a few short years ago of Narcotics Anonymous. We tore down as fast as we built. That's the kind of people we are, and we must recognize that to recover. All of us must know the nature of the illness, the nature of the addict, and the nature of recovery. All these things are necessary to grow and to live and to change. It started from resentment. Resentment made us grow. And that leads into that quote about HFD groups. Let me find something here. A copy of a set of handwritten minutes that was taken in 1953. The first entry is dated August 17th, 1953. The committee of six, including Gilda Krauss, Paul Rosenbluth, Jimmy Kinnon, Steve Ryan, Frank Carnahan, and Doris Carnahan, got together at 10145 Stagg Street at 8 p.m. for the purpose of organizing an AANA group. The name San Fernando Valley Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous has been voted on and accepted. Nomination of Jimmy Kinnon for chairperson. Nomination of Doris Carnahan for secretary. Nomination of Frank Carnahan and Gilda Krauss for a six-month period of time on a rotating committee for leadership. Nomination of Paul Rosenbluth and Steve Ryan for a three-month period of time on a rotating committee of leadership with Jimmy Kinnon as alternate. The following bylaws entered and accepted as of this date, August 17, 1953. In effect, as long as the group is active, any suggested changes by four or more of the people active in the group, call the secretary and request a committee meeting. And they go on, September 14th, name San Fernando Valley AANA changed to Narcotics Anonymous. The first meeting Narcotics Anonymous acts purpose. This includes some talk about the first meeting. This is the first written statement of our fellowship. Narcotics Anonymous, our purpose. This is an informal group of drug addicts banded together to help one another renew their strength in remaining free of drug addiction. Our precepts are patterned after those of Alcoholics Anonymous, to which all credit is given and precedence is acknowledged. We claim no originality, but since we believe that the causes of alcoholism and addiction are basically the same, we wish to apply to our lives the truths and principles which have benefited so many otherwise helpless individuals. We believe that by doing so we may regain and maintain our health and sanity. It shall be the purpose of this group to endeavor to foster a means of rehabilitation for the addict and to carry a message of hope for the future to those who have become enslaved by the use of habit-forming drugs. starting Monday night, October 5th, and each Monday night thereafter at 8:30 p.m. Corner of Conterra and Clyburn, Sun Valley, California, directly behind the Sun and Lumber Company. There were 17 people on the list for the first meeting, and I have a list of the names if anyone's interested. Out of that set of documents, well, there's some real interesting things that happened in there. Everyone resigned within the first 6 months. and other people came on the scene, and that these handwritten minutes cover a period from April 17th through December 18th of 53. And during that period, I think just about everybody of that initial group of six resigned. There are some bits and pieces of documentation that go beyond that. There's a set of bylaws here that was written at that time from those minutes. Founding bylaws. A couple of years later, 1956, we published our first piece of literature. There are very few of these copies around. And it was real different then. It's real clear if you read this that we didn't have a very clear disease concept. People have asked, you know, whether or not the first step in powerless over addiction was a conscious decision or whether or not it was coincidental. I honestly don't know. I suspect that what happened was that people were coming to meetings with a variety of drugs of choices, and they tried to find an encompassing term. And so they picked the term addiction. Whether that was... I don't honestly believe that the implications of that, that they were aware of that at the time, and how that has created for us something very different than our roots. I won't read this, but there's some neat things in here. You can see some grains of our current literature in here. There are phrases. There are bits and pieces that you can trace on through. The first 7 years, and this is through talking to people and through tapes, and through what I can gather, and I don't know about 100% of the accuracy, but the first 7 years in this NA that we know of, I think is a lot like it was in some of your home areas. On again, off again. A meeting would start up for a few months, somebody would carry the ball, you know, newcomers would come, newcomers would go, everybody would go back to AA. A year later, somebody else would start another one. Maybe they'd say, oh, we get some addict walk in the door, have trouble identifying. And it would happen again. And I find no consistency in Narcotics Anonymous between 1953 and the end of 1959. In fact, there are statements that indicate that NA died out. And everyone went back. And in that same talk, it says, find it so I can quote it accurately. We did begin in 1960 again, the beginning of 1960. There's a second tape that was made two years after this that says the end of 1959. From talking to a couple of other people, it's either January of 1960 or December of 1959, we started again. And it's real consistent with tapes and stories that are readily available. Bob Barrett's story, I found the only NA meeting in the world, talks about one meeting, and if you put a screen time together, it dates from right around this time. Jack Whaley, who is a member who is now deceased, talks about going out to the San Fernando Valley, and there would be one or two people, one of them clean and the rest of them loaded, and you'd go back the next week and the same clean person would be there, and there'd be three different people loaded. But we know that there's consistency since 1960. We did begin in 1960 again, the beginning of 1960, with about four people. And we started to build a group up again according to the original concept, the steps for the individual and the traditions for the group. We've been growing steadily ever since. Primarily, I believe, we've been growing because we haven't had the domination of any one person or group, particularly in the area that most of us know, the California area. I think primarily that is the reason, the main reason for the big difference. Plus the fact that more and more addicts know the value of 12-step work. It goes on to talk about some funny things. It talks about 8 or 10 addicts descending on some poor junkie. Everybody was afraid to go alone. This tape, by the way, is available. I supplied Billy with a copy of it today, and he's going to make a master for it. I don't know if you can order it this week, but perhaps. That meeting, by the way, existed until the last year or two. Meeting just recently closed down. It had met in the same location once a week since 1960. I was RSR. That was my first service position, was RSR for that group in January of 1971. It was exciting to be part of that. And the story goes on from there. And it seems like we've dropped into phases. Shortly after that, we published another book, which looked like this. This is one of the last ones printed. It was a different shape. This is what the white booklet looked like when I came around. In 1962, this was originally published, and it's basically the same format we have today as far as what's in this. There are no major differences. The stories aren't quite the same. Some of them are identical. There have been a couple dropped and a couple of added. In 1975, we found out that we went to the current format, which is a quarter of an 8.5 by 11 sheet. We found out we could add 2 pages and save 5 cents a copy. Shows you how quick we all were. So we took out stories of people who had relapsed and added a few more stories in there. And that's the source of the stories in the white booklet now. That was in 1975. Went to the new format. This is all there was for a long, long time, from 62 to 1976, when we first started getting some IP. 75, we started getting some IP, some of which are no longer around. But there were some other things that happened in the meantime which are real significant. In the late 60s, by 1963, that one group had grown to 4. I have a copy of one of the first white booklets that didn't have any stories in it. And it has a world directory rubber stamp on the back with 4 meetings. I didn't bring it because I didn't want to bring too much. We went on in around 1964. We started something out of the need. We started 2 service committees. One was called the Parent General Service Organization of Narcotics Anonymous. By the way, that first committee that I read before was called the Governing Committee. Things have changed. And really, this is a big turning point. It's when we formalize some kind of services. The other committee that was formed in 1964 was the Board of Trustees. And people were real sensitive about the fact that N.A. had died. People were real sensitive about it. And the original purpose of the Board of Trustees was to assure that that would never happen again. We continued to grow. The first newsletter in Narcotics Anonymous was published in 1968. Here's a copy of it. That's neat. It was called N.A. Newsletter, The Voice of N.A., Volume 1, February 1968. It's taken us a long time to start this paper, but if we bring to mind the saying, all past is prologue, we can realize how well it applies to us. Increased hope for more and better recoveries comes from a better understanding of our disorder plus the experience of addicts who have long-term recovery. At this time, there were perhaps 10 meetings. The fellowship had branched out a little bit. It had moved to Northern California behind resentment. A family that had been active in the fellowship were sort of ridden out of town on the rail to a degree. There was a lot of controversy during that period about the founding of Narcotics Anonymous. There were basically two individuals that were in a heated controversy over this. One was Jimmy, and one was a man named Cy Nalis, who was very important in the early years of Narcotics Anonymous, one of the early NA members. There are two lines in the founding minutes that were written with a different pen and by a different person than the rest of the minutes. The two lines are the changing of the names in Narcotics Anonymous and Jimmy Kimmon's name on the roster of the first meeting. I have no idea the significance of that, but I know there was a lot of controversy. That's what triggered the formation of the Northern California Fellowship. That and a starting a halfway house sort of thing, a recovery house there. There's some literature from that. This period of the 60s, you know, the impression I get of it was that it was a laying a foundation. It was grasping a stranglehold on a meeting and sticking it out. And there was a lot of this that some of you may have experienced in sitting alone. But the meeting went on. And there was consistency beginning then. No longer the inconsistency of the 50s, where there was no person who was consistently involved, where there was no meeting that lasted consistently. Things happened in the 50s. There was one place in California called Shire's Dryer. They had a meeting there once a week, and they counted heads. And if there were more addicts there, they had an NA meeting. If there were more alcoholics there, they had an AA meeting. And that was the NA meeting. Or very often people would get together after an AA meeting and go out to coffee and call it an AA meeting. Just like it is and it was in the early days of many of your fellowships, I don't think the history of NA is really that much different than the history of your local fellowship. Sputtering attempts, frustration, successes, failures. The 60s began a growth. Began, and during the 60s, we grew from one meeting to 20. I don't think it was a solid foundation, but it was kind of like pouring the concrete. And maybe the early 70s and the era of the 70s were like framing it out. The the period of time after the since 1970 is near and dear to my heart because I've gotten to be part of it and participate in it. When I came around NA, there weren't a whole lot of people involved. You could count the people involved in service actively on one hand. There was the parent general service organization, the board of trustees, and of course you wouldn't want to go to those things. Because after all, I asked someone who was around in the early days when people first started just going to NA. And he said, Greg, it's about the time you came in. So about 1970 is when people just started seeking recovery in NA. It wasn't in 1953, it wasn't in 1960, but around 1970. When we became, when someone, God forbid, stayed clean in NA, didn't have to go anywhere else. I was reading you this, this newsletter a while back from 68. Some of the question has often been asked, this is also the source of another look. The question has been asked about what's on this, on our first edition of the basic text and everything up until the third edition. It's copyrighted by something called Carina. And people wonder, what the hell is that? Okay. Statement of purpose, the names of the newsletter. One, to share experience, strength, and hope, but the attitude still suffers. Two, to better carry the message of recovery through the voice of conscience. Three, to provide better communication with the written word. Four, to build up a source of information that will provide material for future literature based on a cross-section of personal experience. Five, to hopefully provide another means for personal and fellowship growth through creative action. Six, to help establish our own publishing company. CARE, letter standing for compassion, action, respect, and empathy. And they found out that there was already a CARE publishing, so they added NA on the end of it and became compassion, action, respect, and empathy in Narcotics Anonymous. And that's what Carina stands for, and that's what's behind it. It was a name that was established in 1968. The WSO, a few years back, looked into the name Carina behind a question asked at the World Service Conference, and as a result of that, we no longer copyright our material by that name. For whatever reason. There's some neat things in here. There were about six volumes of this newsletter. There's another one here from June. 1970. Some things really started happening. There seemed to have been spurts. It's almost like there are cycles. There was a growth in the fellowship that began occurring about the time I came in. And one of the big things that happened was our first World Convention. And I'll read you the invitation that went to the fellowship. This letter is your invitation to a Narcotics Anonymous conference to be held on the week of November 5th through 7th at the La Mirada Country Club in La Mirada, a suburb of southeastern Greater Los Angeles. This conference is not limited to NA members, but to all those interested in Narcotics Anonymous or wishing to attend, wishing to learn more about our NA recovery program. We are cordially invited to attend. In addition to an official business meeting for delegates of all NA groups, we'll have a speaker and participation meeting, general discussion section, a banquet, and sufficient free time for those who wish to visit Disneyland, not Berry Farm, or other nearby attractions. Come and bring your friends. The principal purpose of this conference, however, is to get together delegates from NA groups in all localities, both in the U.S. and other countries, to establish an NA World Central Office and elect a paid full-time business manager to be in charge of this office. The formation of a central office and the election of its manager by representatives of NA as a whole, rather than by members from any one region, were so voted by the Board of Trustees of Narcotics Anonymous at the July 23rd, 1971 Trustees meeting. We feel that such a World Central Office will do a great deal toward solving the communications problems that have arisen in NA during its recent period of rapid growth. We grew from 10 meetings to 20 meetings in 4 years. That's pretty rapid if you go 53 to 53 to, in 13 years, we grew from 1 to 10. Where was I? We want to be sure that the experience, strength, and hope developed over the years in many areas where NA has been effective are made available to new groups everywhere. We want to be sure that requests for NA literature and for information about our fellowship are answered promptly and accurately. Before this, the World Service Office was in the back of someone's car. Whoever had the box. Kind of like our meeting box. And that's the way it was. In one of the movements of the World Service Office, 1/3 of the files in Narcotics Anonymous were lost. That was in 74, I believe. Okay, however, we're not inviting you to just a business meeting, important though it may be. This will be the first conference given for Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. And we'll have various steps, so on and so forth, through registration. This letter that went out to the fellowship documents the first fellowship-wide service committee, the first conference, if you will. It wasn't the World Service Conference as we know it. It talks about the first World Convention, and there's a program for it, and a banquet ticket. It also talks about the founding of the World Service Office. That did, in fact, happen. And on January 1st, 1972, the World Service Office was opened. This letter here, dated December 71, announcing that, this is really fun. the facility at Crenshaw can also be used as a meeting place where rent will be charged to help defray the cost of operation. We're talking about a time when the gross revenues of Narcotics Anonymous were $300 to $500 a year. Maybe $700. It is our sincere hope that every group will support your World Service Office. In order to ensure its upkeep and maintain an office manager to service all areas. Also, we would like to encourage individual pledges from all areas. From all is underlined. As of this date, we have approximately $500 in the bank. Half of this amount is a result of the convention and represents the balance left over after all bills were paid. We have pledges for $300 a month, of which $150 has been paid. We need approximately $600 a month to operate. The office manager's salary is $350, plus the business phone is approximately $75 a month, plus rent and equipment. If we could get 100 people to pledge $6 a month, or 200 people to pledge $3 a month, we could make it. We need your support to survive. All group representatives should impress upon all members the needs of our fellowship. Their support is greatly essential for the survival on a national level. Support your World Service Office. Keep coming back for you. Okay. The pledges weren't coming in. The office manager never got paid and never took over. The Board of Trustees opened the office on January 1st, 1970. And there has been a World Service Office ever since then. In 1973, the third service committee for Narcotics Anonymous was formed. There were about 30 groups in the at the time. Now, no, I take it back. There were about 70 groups at the time. It jumped from 20 to 70 between 1970 and 1972. In the parent general service organization, Narcotics Anonymous, there were about 35 or 40 groups involved there, the other 30 groups being spread around the United States. That's the period that the fellowship in Philadelphia dates from, the early 70s, beginning of 1970, perhaps even slightly earlier. There were a few pockets of NA meetings. I didn't bring it, but I have a list of all the NA meetings, known NA meetings in 1972. It includes meetings in Germany and many states, all of which have died out. None of those meetings still exist, outside the ones in California. The San Fernando Valley Fellowship was supporting the rest of Narcotics Anonymous. There were six meetings in the Valley. And at a typical parent general service organization meeting, there might be 10 of the 40 or so meetings represented. I know that sounds familiar to you. The history of the fellowship is not much different than the history of your local areas. And most of the financial support was coming from San Fernando Valley. San Fernando Valley got tired of carrying the ball and decided they would form their own area. They formed an area service committee. Of course, there was no regional service committee or anything else. They formed the San Fernando Valley Area Service Committee and sent a representative to the parent general service organization, and there was a riot. A house divided cannot stand. What are you trying to do? Destroy Narcotics Anonymous. There was a war going on between Northern and Southern California. Southern California NA at the time was based on the idea that NA was a separate and distinct fellowship. The Northern California fellowship was based on the idea that Narcotics Anonymous was a bastard stepchild. There was a lot of controversy.